The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show, sponsored by Legacy Precious Metals. There's never been a better time to invest in precious metals. Visit LegacyPMInvestments.com. That's LegacyPMInvestments.com.
Welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. I shouldn't tell you this, but Eric hired someone who sounds just like him to host today's show. But since I'm the announcer, they told me, so I'm telling you, don't be fooled. The real Eric's in jail.
Willkommen, bienvenue, welcome to hour two of the Eric Metaxas Show. In this hour, I desperately want to talk about this exciting new book, Religionless Christianity by Eric Metaxas. It's a blockbuster, even though it hasn't come out yet. But I'm not going to talk about it. I'm going to talk about a book that is out by my friend Jack Posobiec. It is a very important book. It's called Unhumans. Jack, honestly, congratulations on the book, congratulations on the title, and congratulations on all you do to get the word out about what is happening in America and the urgency, trying to communicate the urgency. We were talking about that. Keep going.
Well, thank you, Eric. And the urgency is simple, is look, they are locking up pro-lifers. They are locking up religious women. They are locking up landowners and homeowners. Again, this is a feature that, by the way, the abolishment of private property is, of course, the central tenet of the religion of communism. It is on which all others rest. And so, of course, you know, going and locking up landowners, go and look what Chairman Mao did to landowners, or what happened to the kulaks in the Russian Revolution. I assure you, we're lucky that all they're doing is locking them up at this point. But the idea that Or what the Rojas did in Spain, the idea that all of this is happening just at random, that all of these answers, all of these problems that we see are just happening by the flooding of our border, the letting in of ne'er-do-wells, of criminals, of illegals, letting in of an underclass, and the flooding of the country with a lumpenprol, as Marx would say, is, again, part and parcel. Because what we're seeing, Eric, is that leftist politics is fundamentally a coalition of the fringes. And the way that their politics works is not through, you know, persuasion or good answers. It's through increasing the levels of those fringes. So increasing the amount of criminals who can vote, increasing the amount of legals in the country, and then giving them the right to vote, increasing the amount of people who claim they are marginalized, who claim they are oppressed, who claim they are, and this is where you get the inverted hierarchy of intersectionalism. Again, we see this again and again. And as conservatives, I've noticed this pathological sense, and it is pathological among a lot of conservatives, to complain and whine and say, oh, they shouldn't do that, and scold and tongue lash, and you shouldn't have those beliefs, and you do nothing as their coalition grows larger.
I just have to say, like, the perfect picture of the nonsense of intersectionality, I guess it was yesterday, a black man named Don Lemon, an oppressed group, also gay, oppressed group, was quote unquote married on Fifth Avenue. And just the picture of him and his, I think the term is boyfriend, with their dogs walking down Fifth Avenue, just being lauded, by Joy Behar and Alec Baldwin and all these people. I just thought, this is the antithesis of oppression. This is a celebration of what? I don't know.
It's a celebration of power. It is a celebration of power. They are flaunting in the face of Christian America and religious America that we have now ascended. We are now the ones in power. We are the ones who will flaunt it in your faces. We can walk away from X. We can walk away from CNN. We can do everything else. And we are still the ones in power. It is, as the kids would say, it's a flex.
It's a flex. Well, I just have to say, the fact that they were carrying their cute little dogs, it's kind of like,
of
yes, we are the cliche. The cliche of two men, coming out of, and by the way, it's Fifth Avenue Presbyterian Church where they were made. That used to be an actual church. I knew Tom Tool, who was the lead pastor at that church a number of years ago. The idea that these ideologies have infiltrated the church, that's what I talk about in our film Letter to the American Church, that is the most horrifying, that these ideologies have infiltrated the church.
The fact that it's New York City as well is so important to us, because you can go see it this past Easter Sunday or these other days. Go and look at 1956, the New York skyline on Good Friday.
Yeah.
The three crosses of Calvary.
Yeah.
And now you go fast forward to today, and we have Easter Sunday being declared the day of transvisibility. And much of the skyline of New York City lit up with the colors of the trans flag. The question is, what happened in America whereby in the former system of values where those three crosses of Calvary were proudly displayed on Good Friday? Remember, America has always been and maintains to this day to be a Christian majority country.
Oh, look,
and
it's not just Christian majority. It's funny.
Is not allowed to show our symbols.
Well, we also would not have an America if not for the Christian faith. It doesn't mean that we legally require people to be Christians. But you know something, Jack, I'm older than you. In the 80s, when I was first living in New York, there was at least one building. It was probably the Pan Am building, or what used to be called the Pan Am building, above Grand Central, with the lit up in the shape of the cross, with the windows in the shape of the cross. I remember this in the 80s. So
they do it on Good Friday?
That's what I'm saying. This is not something that went away in 1956.
It is not new.
It's gone away over time, and here we are. And now, you know, we're celebrating Don Lemon, who's so oppressed. It's sad. Our argument, Eric,
is that this ideology, this competing ideology, has supplanted the former power ideology in the country, the former moral core of the country, if you want to use it in those, put it in the couch in the language. And so this is where, by the way, you see this, and I see this all the time myself as, you know, I've come up with a new phrase for this, by the way. I've realized that you get in trouble. You don't get in trouble for going to church and saying, "Oh, I'm a Christian, and it's Easter, and I'm going to go to Mass, and I'm going to go there with my family, and we're going to go to service, and then we're going to have an Easter dinner, and we're going to put out the eggs, and everybody's fine. Nobody cares." But you know when they start caring, Eric? They start caring when you become an active Christian. They don't care if you're a passive Christian, if it stays in the church. Remember this phrase? Behind closed doors. But now, which one is behind? We've
Jack,
been put behind the closed doors.
Honestly.
But if you go and bring that into the public square, if you bring that cross from inside those closed doors into the public square, you will get Christian leaders who are upset with you. You'll get political leaders. You'll get pundits like David French losing their minds. Rob Reiner's going to make documentaries about you.
You wouldn't know this, but this is exactly what I talk about. Everywhere I go. Everything you just said is what I talk about everywhere I go. Christian nationalism is a term invented by the secular left, parentheses, the devil, for
I've never met
active,
a Christian who says Christian nationalism.
For
ever.
Active, well, of course not. But it's the term to demonize active Christians, actual Christians.
Yes.
And no joke, the cover of my new book, Religionless Christianity, God's Answer to Evil, it says there's only one hope left to save America and the world. Active, robust, and public faith in God. That's
look, we did not plan that.
No,
we did not plan
no,
that.
We didn't. That's why when
active,
you say it,
versive, passive Christianity,
active, robust, and
that
public faith in God. And that, folks, that's our only hope. And so, if you want to have your little hobby Christianity and you want to hide like you're doing your little hobby thing on Sunday morning in the little building that has no relevance to the outside world, that's the devil's kind of Christianity. That's Chairman Mao's kind of Christianity. That's Hitler's kind of Christianity. And that's not God's kind of Christianity. So you need to live out your faith.
Kind of Christianity.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's where we are, and that's why this is a call to arms. And I don't mean of the bullet kind, of the rifle kind. This is if you don't fight on your knees, if you don't fight in the public square for these things, they are being what we're talking about. And this is in your book, Unhumans. It is a satanic rage against God. We're seeing it. And many in the church are complying. Many in the church are saying, I don't want any trouble. Let's just play the game and we'll hang out. We'll put a black square on my social media. We'll hang out a rainbow flag. We're inclusive, whatever the heck that means. We're out of time. Jack Posobiec, congratulations. This is an important book. The title is Unhumans, The Secret History of Communist Revolutions. Thank you, Jack.
For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of this show, which is why I am proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you get the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. When you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment, and our military, veterans, and first responder heroes. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just go to PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas, PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas, or call 972-PATRIOT, 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use the offer code Metaxas. Join me. Make the switch today. That's PatriotMobile.com/Metaxas.
Legacy Precious Metals has a revolutionary new online platform that allows you to invest in real gold and silver online. In a few easy steps, you can open an account online, select your metals of choice, and choose to have them stored in a vault or shipped to your door. You have access to a dashboard where you can track your portfolio growth in real time, anytime. You'll see transparent pricing on each coin and bar. This puts you in complete control of your money. The platform is free to sign up for. Visit legacypminvestments.com and open your account and see this new investing platform for yourself. Gold hedges against inflation and against a volatile stock market. A true diversified portfolio isn't just more stocks and bonds, but different asset classes. This new platform allows you to make investments in gold and silver, no matter how small or large, with a few clicks. Visit legacypminvestments.com to get started. You're going to love this free new tool they've added, legacypminvestments.com, legacypminvestments.com. Check it out.
Folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Guess what? I have a guest on talking about a book. We've never done that before, but today my guest is Dr. Cal Beissner talking about a brand new book. Now, you will know that this is something that interests me, and I assume it will interest you. The book is called Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism. Dr. Cal Beissner, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a privilege to be here.
Many people like me have been so thoroughly disgusted with the climate change lunacy that we have just tuned it out. It's like some kind of a pagan religion. It has no bearing on reality. In the beginning, I think a lot of people thought, oh, there's something here. And the more time that passes, the more you feel that this is just something being shoved down our throats. When we try to get the facts, it's confusing. So I think a lot of people have just tuned it out as nonsense. Obviously, we care about the environment, but this seems to be something else going on. What is your take?
Well, if I had to choose only between two extremes, either man-made climate change is real and it's catastrophic and it's going to be an existential threat, and unless we essentially commit economic suicide by depriving ourselves of all use of fossil fuels, we're all going to die, on one extreme, or it's all utter nonsense. There's no global warming. There's no climate change. Human activity wouldn't contribute to it if there were, and we just have nothing to be concerned about at all. Between those two, I think the latter is the more likely true. But we don't have to choose between those two extremes. That's why our book is titled Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism. We're not climate alarmists, and we're not climate change deniers either. Instead, our view is that human-induced climate change or global warming is real, but it is very unlikely to be catastrophic. If we choose adaptation rather than mitigation, that is, if our choice is to let climate change as it will, all right, but we will adapt to it by building seawalls, by having better air conditioning, by lifting more people out of poverty so that they can protect themselves about anything about weather, right? Adaptation will be much less expensive and far more effective in our response to climate change. And indeed, if we choose adaptation instead of mitigation, we will be far better off at the end of this century than we were at its start or at any time in human history.
I didn't, you know, mention your credentials or your background. How did you come to write a book on the subject of climate and energy?
Yeah, well, first off, I didn't write it. I'm one of the two co-editors. My co-editor is Dr. David R. LeGates. He is emeritus professor of climatology at the University of Delaware. So he brings the climatological science background as an editor. I bring a background primarily in economics, economic ethics, developmental economics, and environmental economics. Done a lot of work in the field of population, resources, and pollution. Written several books in the field before this. And then we have 14 other authors who have contributed to this, a total of 9 climate scientists and several economists who specialize in either development or climate, and some energy experts as well. And some of the folks have credentials in 2 or more of those fields. So it's a good mix for this. And I came really to have my interest in this partly because of my own early childhood in India, where I observed extreme poverty. And what I'm convinced of is that the demand that we should abandon fossil fuels in favor of wind and solar and other so-called renewables is essentially a demand that we slow, stop, or reverse the climb out of poverty for billions of people around the world. And poverty is a much greater risk to human health and life than anything related to climate and weather. We know that from the simple fact that over the last 100 years, the rate of human mortality due to extreme weather events has fallen by more than 98%. And that's during the period that we've had global warming, which indicates that the warming obviously isn't bad enough for us to have a difficulty adapting to it. Instead, we can more than adapt to it. We can do just great even with it.
When people talk about global warming, you know, it's great to have somebody you on because I like you on because I always want the answers, you know, and I feel like it strikes me that it has been grandly overstated, the idea of global warming, so grandly that you suspect there's an agenda there. So, I mean, you just referred to it as something that's real. To what extent is it real? And to what extent should we be concerned about it?
Sure. I think we have very, very sound empirical observational evidence that global average temperature has risen by somewhere around 1 to 1.1 degrees Celsius in about the last 150 years. It's rising currently, that is, since about 1980. It's rising at a rate of about 0.14 degrees Celsius per decade. That'd be 1.4 degrees in a century. And frankly, there's nothing to worry about from that. We all experience much greater swings of temperature from nighttime low to daytime high, from winter low to summer high. And in fact, history tells us that the warmest periods for the world have been the healthiest, not just for human beings, but for all other life as well. So we're not looking at massive warming. Richard Attenborough in one documentary actually said that the planet is boiling or will be boiling. Well, gee whiz. Boiling temperature of water at sea level is 212 degrees Fahrenheit. The average temperature in the world right now is about 59, maybe 59 and a half degrees Fahrenheit. it would take an awful long time at 1.4 degrees Celsius per century to rise to boiling point of water.
But I mean, that's so interesting. He's obviously exaggerating. I mean, we know he doesn't mean it literally, but he's still, underscoring the idea of global warming to the point that we're in big trouble. We're going to be in big trouble.
Yeah.
And I have to say, you know, as a layman, it's offensive to me because it's propagandistic. It's trying to shove people to do things that are not in their best interest. You just mentioned it. I mean, it's kind of like what we saw with COVID. People just raise the specter of death, death, death. And they don't talk about, well, how many deaths will there be if we shut down every church? And what will that do? People will commit suicide. Are we factoring that in? No. We don't care about that. All we care about is about COVID death. That's what we're talking about here, the idea that people's lives in India and other places around will be miserable if we implement these changes. But we don't care about that. All we care about is what might result from incremental rise in global temperatures. So it's very myopic. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely. You know, back at the start of the COVID lockdowns, I wrote an article for Cornwall Alliance's blog. I'm the president of the Cornwall Alliance for the Stewardship of Creation, and we basically produced this book. I wrote an article called "How Many Uninfected People Will Die? Will the Lockdowns Kill?" And running some economic models on how many extra deaths occur with every $1 million reduction in gross domestic product, I predicted that the lockdowns would kill more people than the COVID would. At the end, I turned out right.
Yes, unfortunately, you were exactly correct.
People don't look at more and more different aspects of a problem. And that's certainly the case with global warming. They'll say, okay, CO2 is warming the atmosphere. Well, a tiny, tiny bit, yes, and there are reasons why it's a tiny bit, and it will get smaller and smaller. But they forget that CO2 also is plant food. Plants have to have it for photosynthesis, and they grow better the more CO2 there is in the atmosphere. That makes more food available for everything that eats plants or eats something that does eat plants. And that is tremendous help to the poor. A major study done about a decade ago concluded that the CO2 we added to the atmosphere from 1960 to 2012 increased global crop production by about $3.2 trillion. And if we forecast to 2050, the CO2 we would increase until then would increase global crop production by another roughly $9.8 trillion. So you have to look at all the pros and cons, not just at the cons.
I just appreciate your radical common sense, your willingness to see both sides of the story, your graciousness to those who are effectively alarmists and troublemakers, but at least being willing to kind of look at it. So, folks, the book is called Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism. Climate and Energy, The Case for Realism. And Dr. Cal Beissner, we thank you for your work with the book and for being my guest today. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Eric, and the Lord bless you. People can get this book on Amazon, but they can also get it at cornwallalliance.org. cornwallalliance.org.
Hey, this is Eric Metaxas. For years, I've told you about Nutramedics, a professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993. Nutramedics offers a variety of health bundles. Whether you want to support your immune system, improve your sleep, promote joint comfort, or detoxification support, Nutramedics has a health bundle right for you. The best part about Nutramedics, every year they donate a minimum of 50% of their profits to Christian charities and missions. That's right, 50% of their profits. Nutramedics has a goal of surpassing $100 million in giving by 2030. Many of you take supplements already. Switch to Nutramedics. It's the highest quality, and they donate 50% of their profits. Get 15% off by using the code ERIC during checkout. Go to Nutramedics.com and search health bundles. Support your health while helping others in need. Go to Nutramedics. That's Nutramedics.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off. Again, Nutramedics, Nutramedics.com. Nutramedics.com. Use the code ERIC for 15% off.
You might have heard Mike Lindell and MyPillow no longer have the support of their box stores or shopping channels the way they used to. Yes, it's because of cancel culture, but as a result, they get to pass the savings on to you directly by having a $25 extravaganza. When Mike started MyPillow, it was just a one-product company. With the help of his dedicated employees, they now have hundreds of products, some you may not even know about. To get the word out, I want to invite my listeners to check out their $25 extravaganza. Two-pack multi-use MyPillows, just $25. MyPillow sandals, $25. There's six-pack towels, just $25. Brand new four-pack dish towels, you guessed it, just $25. For the first time ever, the premium MyPillows with all new Giza fabric, just $25. Orders over $75 will receive free shipping too. The amazing offer will not last long. Go to MyPillow.com, use promo code ERIC, or call 800-978-3057. That's promo code ERIC, 800-978-3057, promo code ERIC, or go to MyPillow.com and use promo code ERIC.
Hey there, folks. Welcome to the program. Our guest, that we were going to have a guest for this hour,
yeah,
and he couldn't make it in.
Yeah. I don't know why. It was eclipse related or...
I think he got hit by the eclipse. He's one of the casualties. You hear that the eclipse, some people deal with it better than others.
Yeah.
And the guest who was supposed to be here, it hit him hard. Let's just be honest.
In that song, Total Eclipse of the Heart, it's Turn Around Bright Eyes, but I think he got it backwards and he bright eyes and turned around and he burned his eyes out staring at the sun.
Yeah, yeah. And that's when the bus hit him.
Yeah.
And you know what? He was a great guy, but the eclipse, he's just one of the casualties of the eclipse, and we're going to have to move on, okay?
Yeah.
Life is for the living, people. So, well, we did want to talk about some stuff anyway that we might as well talk about it now.
Does anyone else have a 23-year-old daughter who constantly refers to Mercury in retrograde? Because I have one of those at home. And
you have a 23-year-old daughter at home who refers to Mercury in retrograde?
She's always saying, like, any weird thing that happens, she brings that up. And I wonder if that's what happened to Gavin.
But I don't even know what that means.
I don't either.
Well, good.
But apparently it's bad.
Good.
And apparently it's happening now.
Then
so
we're united.
I'm just saying that might be why our guest didn't show
okay.
up.
Okay. Well, it's okay. It's okay. Although there will be payback. No, but seriously, I want to talk about a couple things that I didn't get to talk about in the last segment. I was just in Montana,
mm-hmm.
and I was just in Charleston for a number of days. We were there for like five days.
We should have a travel show. We should be doing a travel show.
I think I am doing a travel show. It's just we don't call it that. But I was just in Charleston, South Carolina, which is one of the most beautiful cities. It might be the most beautiful city in America.
Yeah.
Could you think of a more – I can't think of a more beautiful city.
I haven't spent much time there, and I really wanted to go, but I couldn't make it.
Well, it is
– But you recorded radio on the porch of a beautiful home.
Yes, and guess what? It's not a porch. It's not a porch.
What do they call it?
They call it the – it's not the veranda. Wait a minute. The piazza.
Oh, wow.
They call in Charleston, this is a house from 1846, and although people live in it in the present, and I was there recently, which was in 2024. So this is a beautiful old house, magnificent house. Our friends, Richard and Pam Scurry, lived there, and the owners know nothing about it. They're squatters. So, but these are some of our dearest friends. They've been friends for, whatever, a quarter of a century. They were in New York for years, but extremely dear friends, Richard and Pam Scurry. So we stayed in their home, and they have these magnificent, there's no other word for it. They're piazzas because there's some kind of Italian, I don't know why, but in any event, I recorded a program from the piazza.
Mm-hmm.
And but Charleston is undeniably beautiful. It is beautiful because a lot of times cities will have a block or two that is, you know, nice, or a historic district.
Mm-hmm.
Charleston has that in spades. It's just, it goes on and on, beautiful mm-hmm. Building after beautiful house after beautiful. It's just amazing. And it's because Sherman did not burn Charleston. He burned Atlanta, I believe Savannah, but not Charleston.
Hmm, that was kind of him.
Wasn't that sweet?
Well, I know a lot of cities, too, suffer the whole thing where, like, during the 60s or 70s,
yeah.
like, they decided, you know, the trend was to go modern and they made everything ugly. And I know places in London in particular, they're reverting the facades of some of these places that were destroyed
yes.
with bad design.
Yes.
And they're making them
beautiful
again.
In any event, Charleston is still beautiful. It was never wrecked.
And when I was there, we had just have a number of dear friends that were there. Some friends visited, and we had a Socrates in the City event. I spoke at a pregnancy center on April 4th at their gala evening, which was tremendous. The Lowcountry Pregnancy Center heroes. The next night, we had a Socrates in the City event with Mark Helprin. He is unbelievable. I can't wait till we get this up on YouTube, folks. He's like an insane genius. I mean, his books, his new book is called The Oceans and the Stars. I recommend it highly. With him, I would probably start with A Soldier of the Great War. Nobody's writing like this. No, literally nobody is writing like this. And I had a weird miracle happen.
Hmm.
My friend David Engelhart, who is the pastor, I spoke, by the way, on Sunday at a church in Charleston.
It's a
church plant, King's Church in New York City, which is pastored by David Engelhart. They have a sister church. They planted a church in Charleston. I spoke there yesterday. And David Engelhart showed up at the event. He drove to the event. And he told me this crazy miracle story. I don't know if I have time to get it in. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, he said that he was going to this vintage watch dealer.
Hmm.
And he talked to the guy on the phone, and the guy was like going on and on. When he found out that David and I were friends, he's a big fan of the show and of me and my books, and he just flipped out. And so David went to visit him at this vintage watch store. And David Engelhart said, and the Holy Spirit told me that this guy was going to give me a vintage watch. Now, that's kind of weird, but if you know David, David doesn't like do this kind of stuff. Like, so if he says God told him something. So David calls me up. He says, Eric, God told me that this guy is going to give me a watch. And he goes, and I get there, and he gave me a watch for you.
Wow. That's
and
cool.
It is a Vulcane cricket watch from 1947. But how bizarre. It's just so bizarre. And there's more to the story, but it was like a real miracle. Anyway, we had such a great time in Charleston. We loved it. The Socrates in the City they're always fun. And, you know, I should say my new book, Religionless Christianity, you can purchase copies, signed copies and non-signed copies at SocratesInTheCity.com. SocratesInTheCity.com. We'll be right back.
Every now and then I get a little bit helpless and I'm lying like a child in your arms.
Hey there, folks. In case I haven't mentioned it, I have a brand new book out called Religionless Christianity, God's Answer to Evil. And in the book, I've never written a book like this, and I'm actually curious what people make of it. But one of the things that I talk about in the book, chapter 6 is the spirit behind cancel culture.
Hmm.
And I talk about how this occurred when the Nazis were trying to persecute faithful Christians in Germany. They were persecuting others. But cancel culture was at work. It just wasn't called that back then. And it is happening now. It's happened at other times. So I wrote a chapter called The Spirit Behind Cancel Culture. And so I say, if we're putting forward the idea of religionless Christianity as the answer to the evil we're seeing around us, we should draw a picture of what that evil looks like. And at the dark heart of the evil we're seeing in our time lies that hideous thing called cancel culture. Most of us have experienced something of cancel culture, or we have at least seen it in operation around us. And then I talk about how it works. And I talk about how, like, you know, somebody says something, and then people freak out about what that person said, and they come after them. The mob comes after them. And that's happened to me a number of times, but it's happened to others much, much more dramatically than it ever happened to me. And I talk about the spirit behind it, because the spirit behind cancel culture, it is a demonic spirit. it doesn't believe in truth or justice, so it pretends to say, oh, that's bad, you did a bad thing. But if you apologize, they don't accept the apology. They just kind of – it's kind of like what Jack Posobiec, when he was on the – on he talked about the struggle sessions that they have in communist countries. Like they just – they just want to crush you, and so they want you to confess, but then they don't forgive you. Like, you confess as an example to everyone else, and of then, you better shut up, and then they send you to the gulag.
Yeah, or beat you with baseball bats.
Yeah, or something like that. Yeah. And so I talk about that in the book, how all that's really going on is that they pretend to have some standard of justice or equality, but there is none, because the devil does not have a standard of justice or equality. He doesn't believe in those things, but he pretends to believe in those things so that he can crush you on the way to crushing you. They talk about that. And it has to do with what I call the spirit behind cancel culture. And I talk about Martin Niemöller. Some people know that if you read my Bonhoeffer book, or you probably know about it without having read my Bonhoeffer book, but I talk about Martin Niemöller a lot in this book and a lot of Bonhoeffer in the book. And Martin Niemöller is someone who, in the beginning of what was going on in Germany, he was vaguely pro-Hitler. He was basically saying, listen, Hitler's not as bad as we think. People around him are more radical, but we can work with him. I've met with him. Martin Niemöller was a very distinguished patriot. He was awarded the Iron Cross for his service in World War I for Germany. And so he thought, you know, Hitler, ultimately, he can be reasoned with. And then, of course, he realized, whoops, I was wrong. And by the time he realized he was wrong, it was too late. And so I write about that in the book. But so I write about the spirit behind cancel culture. And in Chapter 7, which is called Further Thoughts on Cancel Culture, I quote Martin Niemöller's poem that he wrote after the war. Mm-hmm. And some of you know it. First, they came for the communists, and I did not speak out because I was not a communist. Then they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak out for me. And that's part of what happens with cancel culture, is they pick people off to try to make an example of you, but they never stop. So if you don't stand for that person who's being canceled, like our friend Mike Lindell, or me or anybody, then they pick these people off, and then they go to the next one, the next one, the next one. And I use the example of our friend Kirk Cameron, who's been on the program. I actually write about him in this book, that he said, like, I don't know, was it 2012? It was like a million years ago. He goes on like Piers Morgan and says, in the kindest, most gracious way imaginable, that he believes in the biblical idea of marriage between a man and a woman. And for this, he is vilified. People freak out like he's some fire-breathing hate monger. And I thought, how many pastors, I'm not going to mention names, but how many pastors, prominent Christian pastors, did not defend him? They said, you know what, I don't want any trouble. Let the wolves have him, and we'll just keep going. Well, that's the way it works. So they come after one, you don't speak up, and then they come after the next one. And you don't speak up, and they come after the next one. And then eventually they're going to come for you. That's just the way it is. It's kind of like in the book of Esther, which I've been talking about lately. You know, Esther's like, well, you know, I'm the queen. And so I don't want any trouble with the king. And Mordecai says, hey, Esther, you're a Jew. Do you think that when this edict is to kill all the Jews, you're going to escape? They're going to get you eventually. You better speak up now. That's what we need to do. So when they cancel somebody, I don't care if you agree with that person. You should not, jump on that bandwagon of attacking or of being silent. And so actually, I'm really radical about this. When they go after Alec Baldwin, I disagree with him on like almost everything. But when they're like, oh, he's a murderer, I'm like, you know what? No, I don't think he's a murderer. I think let's be fair. Let's be scrupulously fair, because when you play that game, it'll eventually bite you. And I think, I mean, that's not a great example. Kirk Cameron is the great example. That how many pastors said, we're not going to speak up for Kirk Cameron. Let them cancel him. And we're just going to get to keep preaching the gospel, the dead pseudo gospel from our dead mega church. We're just going to keep playing church because we don't want to fight for what is right and good and true. We're just going to ignore it. That is the spirit of cancel culture, and it's sick. And anyway, I write about it in the book because we need to understand how it works, and we need to stand up for people. I don't care who they go after. You don't have to agree with that person or anything, but whenever the mob comes after somebody, you need to understand the spirit behind that mob. It doesn't believe in truth. It just believes in winning. And so that's part of what I write about here. And, you know, we've experienced cancel culture on this program. I mentioned Mike Lindell. By the way, I say support anybody who's being canceled. Go to mystore.com. You can buy my books there. Use the code Eric. Go to mypillow.com. Use the code Eric. Anybody, if they're coming after him, that's an indication to me I need to stand up for them. We'll be right back.
Did slowly go by and feed them on your dreams. The one they picked, the one you know by. Don't you ever.
Hey there, folks. I'm talking about my new book. I'm excited. I got a copy in the mail yesterday, Religionless Christianity, God's Answer to Evil. And I want to say this. There's a number of things I write about in here that are, I have to say, I think that it's going to surprise some people. And one of the things I write about is the Tower of Babel or the Tower of Babel. And I talk about how all religion in the negative sense is a satanic project to supplant God, right? So we know that Jesus actually came to end religion. Religion is the effort to, if I do this and this and this and this, somehow I can, you know, solve the problem of evil. And Jesus came to say, you can never, ever, 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 ever solve the problem of evil. Only I, God, can solve the problem of evil. And then by faith in me and by faith in what I have done to solve the problem of evil, then you can participate in standing against evil. But you try to do it on your own.
Yeah, what about, you know, we all have the power within, man. And we're all gods,
right,
man.
So that, okay. So
we have
so,
the divine inside of us all, man.
Yeah, man. So that's the point. So
that was kind of Babel,
Satan,
right?
Satan in the garden says to Adam and Eve, like, yeah, listen, I got an idea. And it's always the devil's idea, by the way. It's kind of like listening to the White Witch in Narnia. She's going to say, hey, I'm going to make you my, you know, prince consort or whatever it is. Like, nah, not going to happen. That's what the devil is saying to Adam and Eve. Like, you know, just do, you know, if you do this and, you know, it'll be good for us. So the devil is always trying to supplant God. And the Tower of Babel is an example of religion in the sense that all of humanity unites to create this tower to reach into the heavens. And there's more to it. But it's this concept of we can breach the distance between us and heaven on our own. And what Satan wants to do, of course, and the scriptures talk about this, and I quote it in the book, but he wants to go into heaven and murder God and take God's place. And so dead religion, the effort to kind of join Satan in this and somehow deal with evil, it's this utopianist scheme that you see in all these communist revolutions. It's anti-God, basically. And so that's really what dead religion is it's this way of somehow, it's kind of like saying I want to get to, you know, Easter Sunday, but not through the cross. And so that's ultimately what dead religion ends up being. I mean, there's a lot more to it. You're gonna have to read the book, but it's interesting because even Christians through history and now are tempted toward these false solutions, which I would say is dead religion. Either you give your heart utterly to Jesus and say, I am dead to self and alive in you, and lead me and guide me in being part of the solution that you want to bring, or I'm trying to do it on my own. And that's what utopianist secular schemes are. So when you're talking about, you know, the New World Order, you're talking about the globalist ideas you know, what we can do. All these things are at war with God, but often not openly.
What about eating kale, man?
Yeah, eating kale. Well, it's interesting. That's kind of funny because there's a lot of good things you can do,
right,
as long as you don't make an idol of it. And right, actually in the book, I'll just close here because we're out of time. But I was going to say, I mention a lot of religious idols, things that Christians do that are, in fact, they're religious. You're worshiping religious idols without knowing it. And I try to make clear in the book, because Bonhoeffer did this, he made it clear that these are religious idols. We need religionless Christianity. We need real Christianity. And Christians are tempted along the lines of dead religion. And we need to be aware of what that is. And so in the book, I mentioned a number of idols. In another segment, maybe with Albin, I'll go through what the religious idols are. In the meantime, please pre-order Religionless Christianity, God's Answer to Evil by Eric Metaxas. Thank you.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.